It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where we have mostly cloudy skies. It is 45 degrees. At the airport, they indicate they have south winds at 10 miles per hour and 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for rain until 4 p.m. or so. Cloudy skies will gradually become less cloudy overnight. Just a chance of rain this evening. A slight chance of rain tomorrow. Coming up on the Midday Report, Governor Mike Dunleavy has vetoed a bipartisan election reform bill, much to the chagrin of legislators. And Senator Lisa Murkowski believes Congress should take its traditional role in authorizing the Iran conflict. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. President Trump says he is raising tariffs on European Union cars and trucks from 15% to 25% starting next week. The president earlier today.
We raised the tariffs because they were not, as usual, they were not adhering to the agreement that we have.
Trump didn't specify in what way the EU was failing to hold up its end of the bargain. The tariff announcement comes at a time of persistent tensions between the allies. Trump has admonished European leaders for not committing more military resources to the Iran war, including the reopening of the Strait of Hormuz. After Germany's chancellor said Iran has humiliated the U.S., Trump said he was looking at reducing American troops in Germany. Iran is presenting another proposal for ending the war. This after President Trump was quoted on Axios rejecting Iran's last offer to open the Strait of Hormuz in exchange for an end to the U.S.'s naval blockade. Here's NPR's Aya Batrawi.
The previous Iranian proposal would have seen trapped oil and gas tankers moving again through the vital Strait of Hormuz, but it would have pushed talks on Iran's nuclear program to a later stage. Trump, according to comments he made to Axios, rejected that offer after meeting with his national security team on Monday. Iran's state news agency IRNA says Iran has now delivered a new text for negotiation to mediator Pakistan with the aim of ending the war that the U.S. and Israel launched 2 months ago. Iran's president, however, was quoted by IRNA saying Iran's ready for diplomacy if the U.S. ends its maximalist approach. The U.S. and Iran have only met once since the ceasefire came into effect. Those talks in Pakistan ended without an agreement. Aya Batrawi, NPR News, Dubai.
Exxon's earnings for the first quarter were more than $4 billion. But the company says if you adjust for an accounting fluke, they're actually twice that. NPR's Camilla Domonoske reports soaring oil prices these last few months have boosted oil companies' profits in the real world, but can mess with how they look on paper.
Big oil companies buy and sell promises for future oil as well as physical barrels of oil. When prices suddenly spike, Exxon logs losses on paper trades and gets profits on physical sales, but the losses show up before the profits, so they're doing even better than the numbers make it seem. Exxon CEO Darren Woods says he expects oil prices to rise further.
I think it's obvious to most that if you look at the unprecedented disruption in the world supply of oil and natural gas, the market hasn't seen the full impact of that yet.
High oil prices have pushed up gasoline prices in the U.S., made worse in recent days by a refinery outage in the Midwest. Camilla Domonoske, NPR News.
U.S. stocks have ended the day mixed with the Dow closing down 152 points at 49,499. The Nasdaq could gain more than 200 points. You're listening to NPR News.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor llama al 907-481-2400.
For KMXT News, I'm Terry Haynes. At least 16 candidates are vying to be the next governor of Alaska in this year's primary election. One of those candidates is Democrat Jonathan Kreis Tompkins, a former state legislator from Sitka. KMXT's Davis Hubby spoke with Kreis Tompkins during his visit to Kodiak for Comfish on April 16th, and he has this report.
Jonathan Kreis Tompkins, a.k.a. JKT, my initials, just kind of got took hold in the legislature, a little shorter to spit out, and I am running to be the next governor for Alaska because I want to be the opposite of Mike Dunleavy in the governor's office. I mean, that's only slightly tongue-in-cheek. I think that's actually a pretty good summary of my sort of outlook on things. I spent 10 years in the legislature. I was a part of the bipartisan coalition that formed in the House of Representatives. And I think that approach and spirit of governance where you have Democrats and independents and moderate Republicans kind of focusing on what you can get done, what you can agree on, is great for Alaska. And I want to see that same spirit of governance in the governor's office. And to put it mildly, that has not been the case the last seven years. And I'd like to change that.
I'm not sure how familiar you are with the industry, but there has been a plague of issues that the commercial fishing industry as a whole, multiple sectors, you know, not just processors or one specific gear, but all sectors are struggling with. So how would you kind of help address some of these issues from the governorship?
I mean, number one, I feel like the current administration has been very hostile to Comfish. Talk with anyone who's participated in the Board of Fish process, and it's eyes wide open about the lack of balance and how, you know, the Board of Fish right now is just dominated by one perspective. I mean, as governor, I want to restore balance on the Board of Fish, and that means appointing people from all user groups, not just one user group. It also means geographic diversity on the Board of Fish. So I think that's incredibly important. Prioritizing port and harbor infrastructure, which is, you know, if you're going to home port a fleet, like, you've got to have a port, and you have finite dollars to invest. And in my mind, investing them in infrastructure, which in turn enables economic opportunity in the form of commercial fishing vessels, permit holders, quota owners, that is the high priority in my mind for infrastructure investment.
Another topic that's always a big attention getter for Alaskans is education, of course. Where do you think the base student allocation should fall, and how do you think the state legislature, government in general, can kind of get to the appropriate amount for the base student allocation?
I think the base student allocation should keep pace with inflation. And it's fallen behind for the last 10 years, which basically means you're cutting education. And when you cut education, you close schools, which Kodiak has seen and communities across the state are seeing. And that started while I was in the legislature. I mean, I was voting to have education funding keep pace with cost and inflation. But partly because of this governor, that ultimately did not happen. And so we need to bring the BSA, the base student allocation, back up to par and have it from there keep pace with inflation. The legislature, I'm hoping, is going to continue to make moves in that direction. And I think there's smart, reasonable approach in the legislature. It's just a real question of the governor's veto pen coming down. I mean, for me as governor, obviously not going to veto education funding and going to use the sort of political capital you have to support it.
And then with cost of living on the sort of goods and services, such as, you know, the price we pay for heating fuel or groceries at the store or shipping costs that go along with that, getting goods to coastal off-road communities, how would you look to help address those costs?
That, you know, the state should be focusing in areas where it can help contain costs for consumers. I mean, I think an area that really comes to mind for that is energy and electricity. And, you know, Kodiak and Sitka are very similar in that we're, you know, almost 100% powered by renewables and also energy independent and control our collective destiny because of hydro and wind. But I think kind of exporting that Kodiak or Sitka model to the rest of the state where you're self-sufficient, you're controlling cost because you're not dependent on the wildly fluctuating cost of fossil fuel, natural gas, or diesel, just makes so much sense.
Again, that was gubernatorial candidate Jonathan Christ Tompkins speaking with KMXT's Davis Hovey earlier this month. You can listen to the full conversation online at kmxt.org. The primary election is August 18th, and the top four candidates, regardless of party affiliation, will advance from there to the general election on November 3rd. U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski says it's time for Congress to assert its authority over the war against Iran.
I do not accept that we should engage in open-ended military action without clear direction or accountability. Congress has a role. Congress has to step up and fulfill that role, that obligation that the Constitution assigns to us.
Murkowski has voted against six Democratic resolutions to immediately end the war, but in a speech on the Senate floor on Thursday, she said she plans to introduce an authorization for the use of military force, or an AUMF. She says it's both an authorization and a limit.
An AUMF recognizes the reality that the U.S. military is already engaged and provide structure and clarity by requiring the administration to define what we're trying to achieve and the means of achieving it. It requires reporting to Congress, and it brings transparency where little has existed over the past 2 months.
Democrats in Congress have been highly critical of the Trump administration's war strategy. A few Republicans have also raised concerns about the cost and what they say is a lack of information from the administration about the goals. Senator Dan Sullivan raised no such concerns at a hearing yesterday with Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth. Sullivan said he supports the administration's record-high budget request for the military.
Mr. Secretary, I mentioned in the classified hearing today, but I do think the $1.5 trillion top line is historic, meets the needs.
Sullivan praised the administration for requesting the money to modernize Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson. He also drew attention to Russian incursions in the north and made a pitch for the Defense Department to lend support to an Alaska gas pipeline. He asked no questions about the war, except to point out that the U.S. did not intentionally target civilians in an airstrike that destroyed a school in Iran. Sullivan's office did not immediately respond to an interview request or to say whether he planned to support Murkowski's Iran war authorization. Governor Mike Dunleavy vetoed a bipartisan election reform bill yesterday afternoon, setting up a contentious override vote in the coming days. Senate Bill 64 proposed a variety of changes to Alaska's election system, especially around absentee voting. The bill would set up a ballot tracking and curing system, which would allow Alaskans to watch their votes move through the counting process and correct minor errors in absentee ballots. Hundreds of ballots with curable issues, especially on military bases and in rural Alaska, were not counted in the 2024 election. The bill would also offer postage-paid return envelopes for absentee ballots. The bill would also shorten the timeline for removing someone from the active voter rolls. Currently, it takes as many as 8 years, even if there's clear evidence the voter no longer lives in Alaska. And the bill would also speed the ballot counting process. In a letter to legislators, Dunleavy said he supported many of the reforms and even encouraged lawmakers to model future election bills on the one he vetoed. But Dunleavy said the ballot tracking and curing system couldn't be, quote, responsibly built, tested, and deployed, closed, quote, before the November general election. The Division of Elections director told lawmakers in March that implementing a ballot tracking and curing system before the general election would be, quote, challenging, close quote, but did not say it could not be done. Senator Bill Willikowski, an Anchorage Democrat who worked on the bill, says it's tough news.
It's a broken system, and he had an opportunity to fix it. It's a bipartisan measure. We've worked with very conservative members, worked with his office, and disappointing.
Willikowski said earlier this week he expected a joint session to override the veto could be convened within a few days. It's unclear whether the bill has enough support, though. It requires 40 votes, and the bill passed by a combined vote of 39 to 20, with one absent member. A proposal to create civics education requirements for all Alaska high school students is advancing in the legislature amid a deepening decline in public trust in government nationwide. Senate President Gary Stevens, a Republican from Kodiak, sponsored Senate Bill 23, which would require high school students to take a semester of civics curriculum, pass a civics exam, or complete a project-based assessment in order to graduate. Stevens, a longtime legislator and former University of Alaska professor, said the goal is to inspire students to be more engaged with their government and civic affairs. The bill would direct the Alaska Board of Education to provide open access, no-cost educational resources to districts. As spring approaches on the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta, so does the breakups of the Yukon and Kuskokwim rivers. Following a cold winter, forecasters say flooding is likely. KYUK's Samantha Watson reports about how to be prepared and what to know about this breakup season.
Okay, ready for a little bit of science? When it comes to river breakups, there are two different kinds, thermal and dynamic. Thermal breakups happen when the river ice is usually thinner and with a low snowpack. After a warm and sunny April, the ice can weaken more easily and break into smaller pieces. That means better drainage and usually minimal flooding. That's what happened last year when you could see smaller ice chunks floating outside of Bethel. The other kind of breakup, dynamic, that happens when it's colder. There's more snow and stronger ice, which means bigger chunks. That can cause ice jams when breakup occurs. This is when more flooding can happen. Because of this year's cold snap on the YK Delta, forecasters are saying this year's breakup is trending towards the dynamic side. These next few weeks will still play a big role in determining how the ice thaws, but it's likely some flooding will occur. So here are some ways you can prepare. Number one, make a plan.
One of the very first things that you really should do is really talk about a good strategy plan with your family, especially for those in your family that need extra help or extra care.
That's Jana Drake. She works with the state's Department of Homeland Security and Emergency Management. She's also part of the Riverwatch crew that monitors breakup. Drake says talk to your family about the best way to get out fast if needed and move to a community shelter. A family communication plan, like a sheet of paper with everyone's phone numbers on it, can come in handy. Drake also recommends building an emergency toolkit stocked with fresh water, food, and batteries. She says life straws are also really great to have around. It's also important to gather all medications together, as well as important documents, including passports, insurance and social security cards, tribal IDs, and driver's licenses. Number two, do what you can now. Drake says to move all vehicles and boats to higher ground prior to breakup. If you can, put other household valuables in water-safe containers. If you have pets, it's a good idea to prepare some of their food to grab if you need to move to higher ground. Number three, stay updated. As Drake says, water is the most dangerous element.
Water, it don't play. You know, fire, if a fire comes around, we can put water on it, it's out. Water, we don't get those privileges. It's going to do what it wants to do, and we have to wait until it is absorbed or retreats.
It's important to stay updated on breakup forecasts and stay ahead of the flooding as much as possible. You can sign up for emailed breakup updates via daily situation reports issued by the state's Emergency Management Department. You can also check the Alaska Pacific River Forecast Center's updated map. You can find links to both of these resources on our website. Faith Clyde works with the Alaska State Emergency Operations Center. She says another impact of the cold winter has been shore ice that's held fast to coastal communities. Their partners at the National Weather Service say it's been a long time since the shore ice has stuck around through breakup.
So what they're expecting is that coastal communities along the Kuskokwim, where the Kuskokwim, the mouth of the Kuskokwim and the mouth of the Yukon, those coastal communities may see flooding in ways that is a result of the shore ice still holding fast as breakup reaches the ocean.
Some of these communities and other villages at risk include those impacted by Halong.
There's a lot of cross planning and a lot of anticipation that some of the communities that were impacted by Halong will also see impacts from Riverwatch. How that looks, you know, no one has a crystal ball and can't quite forecast that, but at least everybody is aware and we're working on trying to mitigate what we can.
She says her department is on heightened awareness for breakup events, and more staff are involved this year across organizations involved in Riverwatch. In Bethel, I'm Samantha Watson.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Friday. It is the first day of May, the year 2026. The sun rose today at 6:17. It will set again at 9:57, which will give us 15 hours and 40 minutes of daylight, a gain of 4 minutes and 38 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high temperature for this date was 62 degrees, set in 1983, and our record low was 27, set in 2006, and then again in 2011. It is currently 45 degrees in Kodiak this afternoon with mostly cloudy skies. At the airport, they indicate they have southerly winds at 10 miles per hour and 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is expecting a likelihood of rain this afternoon at least until 4 p.m. or so, and cloudy skies after that with a high near 46, south winds to 15, gusting to 25. Just a chance of rain tonight, mainly before 10 p.m. Mostly cloudy overnight tonight with a low of 38, southwest winds to 15. And for tomorrow, just a slight chance of rain in the late afternoon, with increasing clouds and a high near 46, south winds to 10. For Sunday, rain is likely. Monday, rain in the morning, then showers. And for Tuesday, just a chance of showers. Chance of showers for Wednesday. And a likelihood of showers next Thursday. We have an incoming tide. Our next high tide here on the east side will happen at 3:07 this afternoon and be 7.1 feet. Followed by a low tide at 8:27 p.m. of 1.9 feet. We do have a minus tide tomorrow morning. That low tide will be at 9:18 tomorrow morning and be minus 1 foot. Over on the west side, your next high tide will be at 3:28 this afternoon and be 12.6 feet in Larsen Bay, followed by a low tide at 9:13 p.m. of 2.4 feet. And your very low tide for tomorrow morning on the west side will happen at 9:49 a.m. and be minus 1.8 feet in Larsen Bay. The moon is pretty much full, 99.9%. It is starting to wane, though. Mariners, be aware, we have a small craft advisory through Saturday for Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 nautical miles, south 30, becoming southwest 25 tonight, 13-foot seas today on our east side, coming down to 11 feet tonight. For tomorrow, south 15 and seas to 9 feet. For Sunday, northeast 20 with 9-foot seas, and for Monday, east 20 with seas at 17 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory through tonight, east 20 becoming south 25 this afternoon, 5-foot seas, building to 6 feet tonight. And for tomorrow, south 15 with 4-foot seas in the Shelikof. In Chiniac Bay, just outside of the city of Kodiak, small craft advisory today, southeast 25 today with 7-foot seas. For tonight, southwest 15, seas coming down to 4 feet. And for tomorrow in Chiniac Bay, south 15 and 3-foot seas. Well, it's happening at St. Mary's Gym today, the Big Fish Fry at the Rock. Drive through or sit down, 5 to 8 p.m. at the St. Mary's Gym. That's just across from Walmart. Come enjoy some fried fish and organic coleslaw. It's $20 the day of and $15 for seniors. Thank you for supporting their school. And you can dine at the location. Again, that's 5 to 8 p.m. St. Mary's Gym, the Big Fish Fry. And it is Friday. That means it's the first Friday of the month. And we had lots of stuff going on downtown in some of the usual places, including the World Migratory Bird Day celebration at the Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge and Visitor Center. It's an extremely family-friendly event. It's free and it's a celebration of birds. That's happening 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. today with featured artist Stacy Studebaker. And they're doing all kinds of things, including bird mask craft, bird touch and specimen table, Kodiak bird identification activities, Kodiak bird photo display, what's your wingspan, the bird rhyme quiz, and light snacks. All ages are welcome. If you have any questions, call them at 907-308-3966. But otherwise, it's 4 to 7 p.m. today at the Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge Visitor Center. Also today, for the first Friday artist celebration, Bonnie Dillard will be at Islander Bookshop. She will use her artworks from over many years to look at inspiration, experimentation, and how we learn from each other. That's at the Islander Bookshop tonight, 6 p.m. On Monday, there will be 2 meetings. The Borough Lands Committee is having its regular meeting in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 12 p.m. And the Board of Equalization will be having their regular meeting in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 5:30 p.m. On next Tuesday, the Women's Bay Service Area Board will be having their regular meeting at the Women's Bay Fire Hall at 5:30 p.m. And next Thursday, the Assembly will be having its regular meeting at the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. These meetings are open to the public, and the meeting packets are available on the Kodiak Island Borough's website. Contact the Borough Clerk with any questions at 907-486-9310. The next Infant Nutrition Workshop for Kodiak Kindness is coming up. That's happening next Thursday, May 7th, 6:30 to 7:30 p.m., at the Kodiak Public Library. Join other parents for this informative, interactive workshop that teaches a developmental approach to introducing solids based on current infant feeding recommendations. All family members and caregivers are invited. Just let them know ahead of time if you need support in Tagalog or Spanish. Visit kodiakkindness.org for more details or call them at 907-539-2660 to register or for more information. But again, that's next Thursday, May 7th, 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. at the Kodiak Public Library. And it's what everyone's been waiting for, the big spring plant sale. It's a community fundraiser to benefit KMXT. It's not tomorrow, but a week from tomorrow, May 9th, starts at 12 noon, and it's at 1223 West Guskoff Street, which is off Mission Road. Vegetable, flower, and herb seedlings, perennials, berries, rhubarb, shrubs, indoor plants, and much more. Let's all grow. For more information on how to donate plants, call or text Marion at 907-539-5009. And again, that is next Saturday, May 9th. Starts at 12 noon at 1223 West Guskov Street.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.
Hello, Kodiak, and welcome to the May 1st edition of Island Byways. I'm Pam Foreman. May 1st already. Although May can bring some pretty wet and gnarly days, it is also the month when things really start to warm up and green up. I've been watching the beach rye over the past week, and green shoots are getting taller, and there are more and more of them showing up. There are dandelions blooming on some of the cliff faces already, and a yellow flower that I believe is a plant called a cliffhanger, or maybe a type of cress. I grabbed a couple of photos, but the plants were too far away up the cliff to get a closer look. According to Stacy Studebaker's book, Wildflowers and Other Plants of the Kodiak Archipelago, the cliffhanger is one of the mustard family and is found from the Aleutians to British Columbia. And cress grows just about everywhere. It's also in the mustard family. Keep an eye on those cliff faces. They sometimes have the earliest blooming wild plants. In the meantime, enjoy the gradual greening of Kodiak. Before Kodiak gets too green, it's always good to have a bit of a cleanup. Just in time, the Kodiak Chamber of Commerce's community cleanup is Saturday, May 2nd. Stop by the high school parking lot starting at 9 a.m. to pick up your bags and figure out which areas you will clean up. Bring your bags back to the high school when you're done and pick up some more if you still have some time. When you come back to the high school around noon, you can grab some lunch and see if you won any prizes. If you have some oil, old paint, or aerosol cans you've been hanging on to, never fear, there will be a hazardous waste drop-off at the high school on Saturday, too. It all starts on Saturday at 9 a.m. at the high school parking lot. If you can't get there at 9, don't worry. The chamber will be there handing out bags until around 2 o'clock. And that's it for Island Byways this week. Have fun and stay safe out there. Thanks for listening.